Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
We have a very popular subject for our discussion. One that I know as soon as I use the word, your ears will pick up, your hearts will flower, and you'll be all smiles. The word is investment. Oh, human beings love the idea of investment because it means, number one, surplus. It means they have a little more than they need, and they can put some away for a rainy day, which, by the way, isn't a bad idea. And you'd be a lot wiser, some of you, to stop spending money like fools. Save your money. I should stop the talk right at that. Don't waste money. But if I go that way, I won't get to what I want to talk to you about, because we're talking about investment. Now, we have a long road to walk down in order to take the idea of investment and turn it into a working tool, something that we can, each and every one of us, have in our hearts and minds and even in our hands, metaphorically speaking, when we're done with what we're going to talk about, to work with, to actually use, to produce and change something that is, in the end, the most significant thing that can be changed in this life, which is yourself. Because we're going to talk about what it means to make a real investment in yourself. Now, most people think that's what they're doing all the time. When, for instance, they invest in X, Y, or Z for the purpose of generating income A, B, C, so that D, E, and F, they can be on a hammock in the Bahamas having an umbrella-shaded cocktail. That's not what we're talking about. So we have to start simple. And I think one of the best places to start is in just simply looking around us at those characters, those individuals that we see have managed to be an expression of something excellent in this life. We are, as a race of beings across the board, not just in the West, but all over the world, we are fascinated with masters, people who have achieved heights greater than those that we think we ourselves are capable of, or if we aspire to them, we look to them to be something by which we can use as an example, just to realize, hey, you know, it's possible. If that person, and I'm taking the simplest example, if he can jump and fly through the air for 8 feet, then maybe I can do it. I'm talking about a basketball player. If that person can play a violin like that, maybe I could, because I feel that in my heart when I watch it, when I hear it. If someone can sing a note like that, oh, I would love to sing a note like that. And the point is that the people that we look at, whether the area is one of sport, philosophy, religion, art, science, we recognize that these people have become something that belongs to us in a way, because when they share what they have uncovered and discovered through their hard work, we get the benefit of it and feel it to be our own for the time that we're in relationship with that experience. But most of us want more than that, and we well should want more than that. We should ourselves want in our hearts of hearts to be an example of excellence in this life. I think it's actually hardwired into a human being to want to be a good, if not great, human being. And we'll talk about what great means in a minute. But the problem is this, and this is where the first great separation takes place among the humanity, is that the greats become great because they invest in something. No greatness without investment, period. Even those who, and this is something that we know because we recognize it, there are those who are born with gifts. But even those with gifts, if they become truly great, become great because the love they have of the gift allows them to work through the resistance they have, which is necessary for purifying the gift they've been given. So here we have another important idea. Where there is greatness in a human being that produces the excellence that we aspire to, there is the investment that human being makes, and in that investment has something to do with purifying in that individual that which stays in the way, stands in the way of the expression of that gift. So now we have the idea of investment. We have the idea of what one must pay for the maturation of that excellence. And that without that, we don't see the excellence. And to the point now, without that willingness on our part to understand that investment through sacrifice, we ourselves can never hope to touch, know in any way whatsoever, the greatness that we are born wanting. Did you know that all children aspire to greatness? All children, you may not remember this, all children aspire to greatness. It's hardwired in them, but not greatness the way you and I think about greatness. Because when we think about greatness, we think about comparing ourselves to others who have achieved greatness. Children don't aspire that way. Before their minds fashion images that turn out to be what punishes them through the rest of their lives, they look out and they see things pretty fairly purely. And when they see things fairly purely, it is an inspiration. They aspire to become part of what they see. There's no longer that, as with us, that idea that I can't. Children don't have I can't in them until they've fallen down a few times and the parents comfort them for having fallen down instead of telling them to get up and start again. So I want now to bridge this idea of the idea that the greats have invested something in order to achieve a relationship with excellence. This is pretty clear, isn't it? Now I want to make a segue. Because we're talking about, in order to have this investment, in order to make this investment, I had to do what? What do I have to do to make an investment? Even on the practical world, I have to take something from somewhere and put it someplace else, don't I? That's what an investment is. This is here, I'm taking it from here, and I'm putting it there. So I'm taking something in order to possess something. Yes or no? Now, we have had in our lives a lot of different examples, instances where we have known such a relationship between buying and selling, taking and gaining. How many of you remember? I do. Do you remember when you wanted a bicycle? Anybody here? Or do they still have bicycles on this planet? Now, this is a metaphor, but if you look in your life, you'll see as children, here you want a bicycle. And if your parents were wise, As a rule, they didn't just give you what you wanted if they were wise. But this isn't a wise planet. But if they were wise, they would have said, well, look, if you want a bicycle, that's great. But you have to choose because, you see, you've been using your allowance to buy baseball cards, to buy Barbie dolls or whatever it is that one is fascinated with, comic books. When I was a kid, it was comic books. I couldn't have enough comic books. You want this bike? You have to save towards it. You have to take from what you have been deriving this pleasure from in favor of this thing that you want pleasure from now. And you think to yourself as a kid, let's see, comic books or freedom? You know, looking good on my Schwinn where, you know, now the girls, they're going to want to ride. You know, do you know you don't have much fun in life? You don't. And do you know why? You're altogether vested in the wrong thing. Your memories, as a rule, don't have any real fun in them at all. Because somehow or other they turn out to be something that proves to you you did something wrong or where life didn't give you what you wanted. You need to grow up a little bit. Time to make a change, which is what we're talking about. So here we go. So, okay, so they choose baseball cards, comic books versus bicycle. I want the bicycle, but I have to give something up to have the freedom inherent in the idea of a bicycle. Everybody on the same page? Now you got a bicycle, but that's only good for so long, because by the time you're 28 years old, you should be off the bike. Although not so much today, I might add. If you can ride a bike, ride a bike. But you think now bicycle was great, but, you know, car, because then she doesn't have to sit behind me on the rack. She can be right next to, you know, I can have my arm, I can reach for the, oh, you know, stretch out and just drop the arm around her. You know how that goes.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
So now the car is the idea, but in order to have the car, I have to give something up. Because if my parents are smart, they're not going to just get me a car. If they're smart, they're sure not going to do that. They're going to say, you want a car, you have to. And if they're in a position, and some parents are, to give their children things, great. But make them earn that. So if you want that car, you're going to have to pay for the insurance. Oh, brother, pay for the insurance. Let's see, now I have to choose. Do I play in the park football with my friends where the girls are after school? Or do I get a job? Oh, got a job. But wait, a car. My arm around the girl. Liberty. Forget the bicycle where you get tired and it rains and you can't go. I want a car. Okay, I give up my afternoons so that I can work and pay the stupid insurance. I hate you, Mom. Yes or no? Now, I'm hoping that you can travel with me down this little lane for a moment, because we're working towards a very important idea. With each new order of freedom, of happiness that we have imagined we will find in the things so imagined, it was required that we gave up things that we had before that, that were themselves our freedom and our happiness. So that across the board, you can see this chain of events. And then finally, after you've got the car and you get in trouble with it, then you want a house because you have to have a place for the kids. Now, you drew that parallel. I didn't. House. Well, I really do want a house. Because I can see by the order of things here that that's a good investment. I think that'd be wise for me to have my own place. But in order to have my own place, you know, I'm working now. My wife may be working too. How do I have my own place? Well, then the thought comes, if I want to have my own place, I'm going to have to give up some of the pleasures that I have now. You know, I like to go out three nights a week. I like to have this thing. Maybe I smoke. Maybe I, whatever it is, I need to save something. I need to save. I recognize the need to save. But in order to save, I'm going to have to take from something that presently is a pleasure of mine. That's not part of the plan because the house wasn't the plan till I got the car after I got the bike. You're following the lineage, I hope. So now I have to take something from myself that's even more difficult to take. Because what good is, you know, life is tough, rough stuff, man. And now I need to take from me the few things that I like so that I can have something what? That represents a greater good to me. Because I can see, to what end is it to have these frivolous things that I do? To what end is that? They're gone. Not only are they gone, but I usually feel bad the next day. So I want something a little what? More permanent. I'm just using a series of ideas to put in your mind the idea that in order for one to have an investment in his life, even at the physical level, that each and every subsequent stage of discovering what one wishes and thinks of as being the greater good for themselves requires that they give up something that formerly was the good of theirs. And that there's sacrifice. There's a definite sense of loss in giving up what one thought was the good for the sake of a greater good. It's inherent in the human being. And human beings don't want to do that. Why? We want our cake and eat it too. Which brings us to the next subject, a certain transition, because it's an important one to make. And I don't want to spend too much time on this because I have so much material to cover. But, you know, I'll say it this way. Did you know that the thing that so completely occupies the human mind today is wealth? Completely. That's it. That's it. But did you know that it actually wasn't, and I could be wrong, I'm not a sociologist, I'm not an anthropologist, I barely have a Walmart welcome card. But the whole idea of wealth didn't really occur to the masses of human beings until I think sometime in the 1800s, late 1800s, maybe early 1900s, when the Industrial Revolution started. Because prior to that, the idea of wealth had to do with the transference of property, essentially, from one noble family to another. And the nobility in those days, they understood that their principal responsibility was to take care of the people that lived on their property that they oversaw as kings, queens, or whatever they were. Now, I'm not sitting here talking about being in favor of this, that, or the other. I'm just saying that for a long time, wealth was not something that individuals had. And that wealth, personal wealth, began when we began to be able to manufacture and sell things. And that individuals' wealth for centuries and centuries and centuries had to do with their character. had to do with the land, whatever small piece it was, even if they didn't own it, in which they had some pride. Now, perhaps I'm making this a little brighter than it was, and one tends to do that when they look over and want to make an example. But for what we're studying here, I want you to understand that it wasn't until individuals began to be able to mass produce things, create things, that then came into slowly this idea of amassing money. Because if I could sell things, then I could acquire property. And if I could acquire property, I could use it as leverage to acquire more property. And the whole idea of money, I don't know what the history of money is. I know they had it in Roman times and, you know, so forth and so on. But for us, the idea of money has taken the place of wealth. Because wealth for human beings originally meant just having a nice life. Being at peace. Having something that was yours and that no one could take away. You fill in the blank. And like I said, I don't want to spend too much time on it. But what I do want to get across is this idea that little by little by little, where once human beings, not terribly long ago, understood that what they were working for was themselves. They invested in their own life. They worked their property, they had their food, they did what they did, they worked for themselves. Now you're saying, well, of course they work for themselves, just like I do. No, you do not work for yourself. You work for money. And when I say you work for money and wealth, what that means is that you work for the idea that if you have it, you will have your own life. And there's the trick. That's how it's been handed off, how the deception has occurred. Because you see, individuals who believe that if they have money means they have power. If they have power, that means they possess their own self. That I have my own life. That I'm working for myself. Who works for himself, who at the end of the day finds that he is the slave of the thing that he has been working for? And you have to answer, well, that doesn't make any sense. And of course it doesn't, because we've stopped working for ourselves, because we don't know what it means to be ourselves, nor how to invest in ourselves. Which is the point of the talk. Making an investment in oneself. Now, if we're following, and how many of you are kind of following along? Good. Well, that's actually stunning if I was to stop and just spend the rest of the time talking about that. That this idea of wealth, of money, has slid in like a snake into this social consciousness, into the global consciousness, and replaced the idea of having my own life, of making an investment in myself. And if I've made such a great investment in myself, why am I such a wreck? Why am I so concerned with what my money shows me as being? Please try to see the contradiction in it. I'm an absolute psychopath because if someone doesn't recognize that I have what I think I have, I go crazy. And I get mad at them, or I think there's something wrong with them because, listen to this, please, they don't appreciate my taste. See, this is how sad, you know, with all due respect, this is how sad you are. You actually think it makes sense that people should respect your taste. My God. You know, what taste are we talking about? Does a human being have taste who sells his or her soul for the purpose of the approval of another human being? Does a person have taste who thinks and compares himself or herself to someone else around them to decide whether or not they're worth what they've imagined they're worth? Is that what it means to have taste? Can you say no?
No, that's someone who's lost their face. They've lost their original face. So, if investing in myself means that I have, you know, I've made a bad investment for 50 years now. Oh, one day you'll laugh at this. You can't now. You're all sourpusses because you actually know you've made the wrong investment. I'm telling you, you've made the wrong investment. And continue to, because you don't know what else to invest in. Now, why don't I know what else to invest in? Well, for one thing, I was born into a world through a series of trip levers has produced a society and a culture where the icon of the ages has to do with what one looks like in a prosperous form. Therefore, achieve this, and I have made a good investment in myself. But life clearly shows that's not true. So in order to understand what it means to invest in oneself, now we have to make another segue. We have to make another turn down this road. If I'm going to invest in myself, the first thing I have to recognize is the self I've been investing in can't be myself. Yes or no? I mean, who gives away their life thinking they're going to get it back like that? Nobody. So what does it mean to invest in myself? What would a real investment be in myself? How would it be made? And what would be the result of it? What is myself is the question.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
So now, take a deep breath wherever you are, because we have to make another change here. You see, you can't know yourself apart from real life. It's impossible. And I'll say it to you in slightly clearer terms. You can't know yourself apart from the spirit that is yourself. Clearly, the mind that has set off to invest in the things that it's invested in can't be yourself. Because who follows something that sells him out with everything he says will make him happier? So the mind can't be self. This brain and all of its activity, the culture that's been crammed into it through our conditioned lives, all of that can't be ourself. So if that's not self, which we can prove if we've followed even in a small way what we talk about, well, what is self? Self has something to do, obviously, with that which would be timeless, not conditioned. Something that doesn't participate in the world that we have not only been born into, but have had perpetuated as human beings. So we have to add this idea now that To invest in myself, I'm going to have to understand what self is, and I cannot understand myself apart from the idea of something divine, of something eternal. It's impossible. And with that idea, I have to say very, very distinctly, and I do so without reservation, religion has absolutely gone all wrong on this planet. And this isn't a religious talk. But I think to say it more clearly, it isn't that religion has gone wrong, because the idea of religion, the root of it, the meaning of the word, is to reconnect. It's humankind that has gone wrong and taken with it and slurred, made horrific in every way as it might be, made religion horrific. Now, why is religion horrific today? Because human beings, in a certain part of themselves, in their unexcellent, how's that for a nice way of saying, in the parts of us that never know excellence, always want the easy way. And what happened was, over time, and this isn't just Christianity, it's not just Judaism, it's not the Islam, it's not Buddhism, it's across the board, so that no one thinks I'm isolating any one particular religion that's gone bad. Religion can't go bad. Human beings have something in them that produces a wrong relationship with life, and that's what's gone wrong. And in this instance, I want to point out that at some point, and now I'm going to talk in one area, but it applies across the board, at some point in Christian life, individuals got together and they thought to themselves, the only way we're going to make the leap from being little pockets here and there of people who worship this idea, this Christ, the only way that's going to work is we're going to have to figure out a way to popularize what we have. Because if we can't popularize it, then Bill down there in the stable, you know, putting the shoe on the horse, or Will who's threshing the field, you know, that's just not going to make sense to them, because they're kind of interested in all these different ideas. And we have to find something that will amalgamate all of these people under one great idea. And here's what happened. Therefore, to popularize, they had to exteriorize the essential meaning of religion. They had to take what was true and inherent in a religious life. Now, throw out your reaction to the word. In a religious life means a life that is connected with the moment as it is. And they had to make it something critical to our talk, by which an individual was told that in order to have and make an investment, not just in himself anymore, but in a world to come. Because if you know anything about tradition, and it's pretty much across the board, in this instance, the early people believed that Christ had come. The Jewish people still think he's coming, in order to amalgamate the world and become a world leader. That was the idea, that he would overthrow all of the unjust, wrong governments, the Romans, and that for his presence there he would be a great and powerful ruler. Nobody would be able to monkey with the kingdom that he came. And that was their view. And their view was why? Because they could only see the world as the world in which they lived. And they wanted to change the world they saw around them. Religion, all religion, true religion, has nothing to do with changing the world around one through deeds. The change in the world takes place when the inner being is changed. Then the outer world naturally reflects the change in the interior man, the interior woman. So real religion always had to do with the change in an interior man, an interior interior woman. But in order to popularize religious ideas, you can't talk to people about making interior changes because, for one thing, they don't have the eyes and the ears to understand it. And on top of that, interior change requires investment. And investment requires sacrifice. And nobody wants to sacrifice the sense of themselves that is a derivative of the world that they have found themselves in. Now, saying this as simple as I can, I'd much rather have a set of six things that I ought to do every day that I can hate myself if I don't do, that I can judge you if you do, and then every day I can look at myself and say, tomorrow I'm going to do better. And every day not do better because I've been given a set of ideals, actions by which to prove that I am a man or woman who loves God, whatever that God may be. And in moving from the interior understanding of what it means to change to the exterior relationship of trying to be someone through deed, we have the birth, and I might say the unnatural birth, of hypocrisy. We have human beings who, on one hand, will say, you should be like this, or you ought not do that, or this is the way to be a good Muslim, a good Jew, a good Christian. These are the rules. And then no more do you say the rules than you're off doing the very thing that you chastise someone for doing. Why? Because I can feel myself to be true through living in an image of myself, and I can judge you by comparing you to that image. But the second that that image falls away, I'm right back into the nature that believes the way to make an investment in myself is to take something from you. Is to do something, to gain something from the world, no matter what it costs the world. And the whole point leading up to this is that in order for a human being to make a real investment in himself, he must first understand that the only self worth investing in is his God-given self. I'll say it even differently. The only investment worth making is the investment in discovering his relationship with that divine life that gave him a self in the first place. And that all other activity is a futile activity, which we see the evidence of. I'm not saying not to go out and become the greatest basketball player, greatest accountant, greatest whatever it is. We're not saying that. We are saying, though, that we need to understand what it means to make a real investment in ourselves. And to make a real investment in ourselves means what? I want my own life. I mean, when you think about what you make an investment in, isn't it that you want some security? You want something that feels real and solid to you? Isn't that the point of it, what we call investments? But we've invested in the wrong thing because we've lived from the wrong nature that told us what an investment is. Did you ever think of the security of a peaceful mind? The security of a heart that doesn't want what someone else has? How about the unshakable contentment of knowing that you are living in a universe set up for your success to invest in yourself, in your true self? All of these things, regardless of whether a person looks at it through this field or that eye, religious or not, has to do with what it means to become a new human being and have made investments in ourselves. So now we get to the whole reason for our talk. Because what we're looking at here is the idea of, well, if I want to make an investment in myself, in my true self, so that I don't walk around and hate people, So I'm not always trying to figure out how to get an upper edge. I'm not trying to look or make an appearance. If I want to make an investment in my true self, what do I have to do? What do I have to sell in order to make that investment?
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
Now, because it suits this perfectly, I want to read something to you quickly. And again, I want to stress, this is not religion the way we think of it. We're talking about now real-time understanding and the knowledge it takes to make an investment in ourselves. I want to read to you 2 quick passages out of Matthew from the New Testament. This is Matthew 13:44. Christ says, "Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a treasure hid in a field, the which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy, therefore, goeth and selleth all that he has, and he buys that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it." Now, both instances have to do with an individual who, seeing something of great value that isn't his, but coming upon it, has to go and sell all that he has in order to acquire that which he recognizes is a greater good than what he has. This is what we've been talking about. Only we have to put it in real terms, not the terms that have been given to you through the ages because of human beings who want their hand in your pocket, by the way, so that then they can imagine themselves as having a good investment. No. We're talking about what it means when an individual actually starts to realize, let's see, I, and now we'll make it simple. I want to invest in a heart that doesn't get heavy. I want to invest in a nature that doesn't get shaken when things don't go the way they're supposed to go. I want to invest in a part of myself that doesn't cause other people pain. I want to invest in something that can be in relationship with life as it is, not as I've imagined it, so that I can have a relationship with something that's eternal. I want to invest in something, there's a good investment, something eternal. And when a person decides this is what they want to invest in, just like the kid who had to get rid of the baseball cards to get the bike, he's got to look around and think, well, what do I have to sell? But now we're not thinking about selling stuff in the exterior world. Now we're talking about, I want something of the inner man, something of the inner woman, something of a kingdom that can't be shaken, and I want to make an investment in that. But in order to make an investment in the interior world, I'm going to have to sell something in the interior world. And that's where it gets beautiful. And this is where no one wants to make a real investment in themselves. They want to make an investment in an idea about themselves so that they can run around looking good or whatever it is that people do. So I have made a list of 10 things that we need to sell. Oh, this won't be popular. And by sell, now you need to understand, sell means to lose, to give away, to sacrifice. Because when we talk about investment, we said that we had to give something up in order to gain something. And in the inner kingdom, the inner man, the inner woman, true self, it is necessary that we give away that which is what? Interfering with recognizing this relationship that we are created to have. So here's the first thing. One must sell the parts of themselves, give away the parts of themselves that love to relive anything. Oh man, just let me relive what you did. Just let me go over it one more time so that I can be sure you're my enemy. So that I can be sure I didn't get the fair shake. We have parts of us, yes or no, that like to relive unhappy moments. Yes. You have to give it up. You have to sell it. Now, what does it mean to sell it? It means that I want the good more than I want the appearance of myself as it's produced through identifying with those thoughts and feelings. What's the good? I want a quiet heart. Can I have that pearl that I have seen in that field? Can I have that interior life that is without that qualm? If every time something comes into my mind and causes me to think about what you did or didn't do, I rush and hold on to that and do what, by the way? In what do I invest myself then? If I identify with and relive an unhappy point in my life, am I investing in freedom from the suffering, or am I caught up in the suffering and listening to it tell me what I have to invest in later to be free? And you know the answer to that question. Here's the next thing that we have to sell, that we have to give up. You have to give up judging people. You know why human beings judge other human beings? Because they make a false investment in themselves. All of these things we're talking about are false investments that need to be seen as false. When you judge someone, guess who is the judge? Guess who's in the court there that you're looking down on, that you're superior to? That's right. So the investment that this judge makes is in the idea that he or she is different than everyone else he sees. We have to sell it. We have to give it up. And I'm going to go through these quickly because I've got to make some particular points. We must sell that hunger that surfaces inside of us that's so desperate on feeding on the approval of other people. If you had one even small insight into how you can't wait for people to see you the way you have cultivated your life so that they'll see you that way, you would sell it in an instant. And I'll tell you why you'll sell all these things in an instant when I get through them. How about wanting to be seen as special, as something that needs to be sold? You tell me what good you have ever done to yourself or any other human being on this planet when you set yourself apart from them in order to be seen as something unique. Fear drives you to do that, and fear keeps you in that circumstance. We must sell anything in us that wants to fight with any other human being for any other reason. Never fight. Never fight. Ignorance fights. Illumination unites. Don't fight. When you have fight in you, the fight is what? You're investing in what you think you're about to lose. If you don't fight with that person or that situation, there's something threatened. That's why you fight in the first place. So I've made this investment, now I'm going to protect it. So fighting has to do with trying to protect what you've invested in. And if you've made a real investment, by the way, you don't need to protect it like that. Next, you have to sell the part of you that rushes. You have to sell the party that complains or compares itself at any time. You have to sell the part of yourself that justifies. You have to give it up. Anything that explains to you why you have a right to be negative, you need to sell it as fast as you can. You need to sell the part of you that wallows in self-pity. And you need to sell the part of you, any part of you that has an enemy for any reason. Now, why do we have to sell this? Well, I've been making the point, but now I'm going to get to it. Every one of the things that I said we need to sell, are they sources of great pleasure or are they sources of pain? They are sources of pain. Why would I invest in something that causes pain in me? Every one of the things that I've said that we need to sell, that we need to give up in order to make a true investment in ourselves, every last one of them, every time we are in that mode, in that nature, we are in pain. Every one of those things. Well, who accepts pain as an investment? Who looks at a negative state, an anger, a fear, a worry, and then in the moment of that, actually thinks to themselves, now this is something I want to keep. But because we don't see the truth of ourselves, those negative states, they sell us on what we have to do to be free of them. And what they tell us we have to do to be free of them is that we have to acquire wealth or power or positions, some place of authority by which we will be no longer subjected to individuals who don't understand our true stature and what a great investment we've made in ourselves. I tell you, it's all wrong. I tell you that any time you want to, you can catch the part of you that's saying, invest in this time when, invest in this resentment, invest in this fear. And instead of investing it, you begin to bear consciously the presence of that lie that lives in you. Because it is a lie that lives in a human being that tells him or her that there will be a time when they'll be free and be themselves in charge of themselves if and when they do A, B, or C. The task, the act in the moment where the negative thought or feeling comes in is to instantaneously recognize first by the punishment inherent in it, and then by the fact that you know a greater good exists, you take what you have that is yourself and you sell it. You give it up. You lose it. And when you lose it, that means that you deliberately lose interest in being identified with the state. You lose interest in identifying with what it tells you you have to do and be to be free. And instead of doing what it says to be free, you bear in the moment its presence and you let God's life free you from it. Because in the inner kingdom, and this is getting to the end here, in the inner kingdom, in the real investment in our true self, these things don't have a foothold. They have no force of their own. Their force is a derivative of our lack of understanding about what we are on this planet to be and do. Sell these states, give them up, and watch what happens.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.